I've just started the tape recorder. So the microphone is going to pick my voice up. It's not going to pick you up. If any of you would like the MP3 of this meeting, just give me your business cards and I'll be glad to give you the audio tape. Also, if any of you would like the PowerPoint slides of this evening, just give me your business cards and I'll be glad to give this to you. I'll explain a little about where I'm coming from. We started Steibel Peabody in December of 1979, and your old company, Avery Dennison, was our first client in 1980, so I have a very warm spot in my heart. We started as an executive level outplacement firm. So we are marketeers, we're business development people, except instead of products, we work with people. We try to help promote and place people in jobs. We're paid for by corporations as opposed to individuals. Then we started getting involved in doing retained search for boards of directors, CEOs, and CFOs. And that's the only kind of searches that we do. It's only retained search, only boards of directors, CEOs, and CFOs. We have another website called Board Options, just focusing on board issues. And then finally, we get involved with companies on leadership bench strength issues. My background is organization development, and so this is kind of a natural role for me. We have 250 consultants in 25 US cities and in 24 different countries around the world. I also am a columnist in Psychology Today, and my column is called Platform for Success, focusing on leadership. So if any of you would like some copies of the Psychology Today pieces, again, just make a note on your business card. I'll be glad to send you those pieces. Today I'm not actually going to be talking about the job interview itself. I'm going to be talking about the things to do before the job interview. So I'm going to stop at walking in the door. And I will tell you a way to evaluate whether or not I'm effective or not. If I tell you everything that you're comfortable with, then I'm not very effective. We've been working with FEI members for probably over 15 years. I ran a group with Jim called the FEI CFO Roundtable, where we worked with CFOs of public companies. So we worked with a lot of CFOs, and many of the training of CFOs is about compliance, not sticking out, following the rules. And now you're in a job search mode, and it's basically a marketing exercise. And a marketing exercise is product differentiation. So intellectually, I think many people in this room understand what this is about. Emotionally, it's a violation of what you've been spending your life doing, which is not to stick out. So the things that I should say should make you a little uncomfortable and say, I don't think I could do that. And my job is to kick you until you do. Here are the goals for tonight. And let's just talk about some people that you know and heard of who are really good at what they do. This guy is known as a very good golfer. This guy has got a great track record in football. And this person has been known as pretty good in tennis. What do they have in common besides that they're very effective? They practice. They practice. And I'm sure if I spoke with Bill Belichick, he would say, the game is really won before the team gets on the field. It's about the practice. It's about the routine that we did before. I know for a fact that Tiger Woods, that's his philosophy. Nobody practices more. So we're going to be talking about the things to do before you actually say hello to a hiring authority in a job interview. And the reason why this is important for you is that our model is you are here to kill your competition. In a healthy, growing, vibrant economy, you can have multiple winners and the pie is growing bigger. But for many of you in this market at this time in 2012, that's unfortunately not the case. It is a win-lose proposition. First thing we're going to be talking about is primary research. And by primary research, I am talking about not what you necessarily read, but things that involve multiple senses, like speaking to somebody, hearing what they say, even smelling them. These are examples of primary research, and I'm going to be talking about two things that you might want to consider doing if you have a job interview. The first is, and I would appreciate your thoughts on this, John. Turn their recruiter into your best friend. I'm a recruiter. John's a recruiter. I'm paid for by corporations. My loyalty is to the corporations that hire me. I assume your loyalty is to the corporations that hire you. My job, and I assume your job, is to present a panel of 3 to 5 well-qualified people. And then the client is going to make the decision between them. I assume that's what you do. It's not my job to pick who's going to be the next CFO. I don't think that's your job either. My job is to present well-qualified people. Now, the first thing you could do with primary research is turn their recruiter into your best friend. And the way to do that is to ask the recruiter this question. You know your client better than me. I may get this job, I may not get the job. The important thing is I don't want to alienate your client. I don't want to make your client say, why did you present Larry Stibel to me? I know I don't want you to walk away from me saying, I'll never present this jerk to a client of mine again. What do I need to know to avoid touching third rails in this company? Because again, my motivation when I'm a recruiter is Karen may get the job, Karen may not get the job. That's really not up to me. But what I'm really concerned is Karen says or does something that's going to embarrass me, make me look stupid because I brought Karen into the mix. Would that be same for you? So this question sort of gets at the heart of my fear as a recruiter, that you'll say or do something that'll make me look stupid. And so what you'll get is something like this. The recruiter will say, there are no third rails, but, and then after the but, they start telling you what's really going on. Now, there are recruiters and there are recruiters. I would assume, John, is that you would be a retained search guy?
No, contingent.
Contingent?
Yeah.
Okay. My job as a retained search guy is to understand the company very well and to have talked with all of the key personalities. Some contingency recruiters do understand their companies very well because they've had multiple assignments. Some may not. But definitely on the retained search side, they will understand their companies very well. They will know the culture very well. They do not want you to look stupid because it makes them look bad. So that is one suggestion that you might want to consider doing. Turn their recruiter into your best friend. Any questions? Any opinions? Anybody ever tried this? Any thoughts about how you might turn this into action? Anybody got any thoughts? Okay. The next is what I call Dunkin' Donuts research. Before the job interview, show up and talk with employees. Now, where can you do this? There are two kinds of organizations that you will be have opportunities with. The first are organizations with open systems, universities, hospitals, local town governments tend to be open systems. In other words, at a university, you can just walk in any building. Nobody's going to stop you. You can go to the cafeteria. You can talk with anybody you want. Nobody's going to stop you. At a hospital, anybody work at a hospital? At a hospital, you can just walk in. There's no security guard that's going to stop you. You can go to the cafeteria. Nobody's going to stop you. These are open systems. Same thing with town government. In this building, I can't do that, right? This is a Class A building located downtown. There's a security guard. I can't do that at Raytheon. There's a security guard with a gun. So I'm never going to get to the elevator door. So I can't do that at Fidelity. But so is it an open system or closed system? If it's closed system, you have to go to your local Dunkin' Donuts. If it's an open system, you can walk into the cafeteria. But most of you will be going to one of these, the local Dunkin' Donuts. And the idea is to make friends with the cashier and ask the cashier to point out some employees of the company as they come in the morning. You want to be there around 7 to 7:30 in the morning. And then when you meet an employee, try this question. This is called the most important question. It was developed by Bain Capital. We use this extensively in looking at leadership development, corporate culture, and we have fabulous results just with that one question. On a scale of 0 to 10, what number would you give to the following question? I'd recommend this company as a place to work if asked by a friend. 0 to 10. And then watch their reaction to the question. What's the number they give, and what's their reaction to your question? There are three reactions you're going to get. First is somebody's going to give a number which is 0 to 3, and they will look visibly hostile and angry, and they are so glad that you asked the question because they are so pissed. And they've been looking for somebody to dump on. And you are an appreciable audience. These are antagonists. They are openly hostile to the company. They are angry at management. They are taking every opportunity they can to say bad things about the company, and they will leave the company as quickly as an opportunity comes. It's very rare that you're going to find this, but you may. And when you do, it's like anything it's a piece of data, just a piece of information. The second is the more likely response that you're going to get. They're going to look at you in a kind of quizzical way. They're going to look a little defensive, like this person is looking. They're going to tighten their body, and they're going to say something neutral. They're going to give a number somewhere between 4 and 7, and these are what I would call the neutrals. They're not hostile. They're not advocates. But you want to listen to what they have to say. These are people that they can be influenced to become advocates for the company, but they could also become influenced to become hostile. They can go either way. When the economy gets better, they'll start looking. They may not jump ship like the hostile ones, but they're going to start looking. And then finally, what you're looking for are the advocates. They are the ones who will say 8, 9, or 10. They will be smiling at you. They will be relaxed. And they will say all the great things about this company. And that's important, too. And you want to make a note of what they said. You can even ask them what's their name, and they'll be pleased to tell you. And if somebody's an advocate, these are the people that a company wants to have recruit for them. These are the people that are saying good things about them in the community. These are the goodwill ambassadors that the company has. And the person that you are going to be talking to And most of you are CFOs who want to report to a CEO. So a CEO would be very appreciative to know that you talked with somebody named Brenda Stewart, and here's what she said about your company. So it's a nice way to get the conversation going by giving the person a compliment. So if you can get an advocate, that's precious. I would recommend that you ask the same question 4 to 6 times. And what you're looking for are themes that seem to occur again and again. You're not looking at definitive research. You're not working on your doctoral thesis. You're just looking for some themes that seem to occur. So you have a conversation with the hiring authority. Why am I suggesting you do this? The reason I'm suggesting you do this is because most of your competition is not doing this. The goal is, think about what your gut intuition says is the right thing to do, and don't follow your gut, because your instincts are the same instincts as your competition. You want to do something different. Karen?
You're talking about 4 to 6 people?
Yeah.
Okay.
4 to 6 different people. So until you get thrown out of Dunkin' Donuts, whichever comes first.
If you don't want to do it at Dunkin' Donuts, is it something you could do on LinkedIn, for example?
I like it if you could see, part of the value of this is to see somebody's reaction. Again, this is easy to do in an open system. You have to find some coffee shop or Dunkin', right. But on LinkedIn, it's really hard. I'll give you an example. This is a bicycle company called Raleigh, and this is an ad that appeared in Africa, because Raleigh is a global bicycle company. The name still exists. Their United States headquarters was based in Marlborough, Massachusetts. I was retained by a company to work with a person who was chief operations officer type person. And he had a job interview at Raleigh Bicycles. And let's say the interview, today's Tuesday and his interview was Friday. So on Tuesday and Wednesday, he hung around the Dunkin' Donuts and he started asking this one question. And as a result of the one question, he got the following information. Manufacturing is frustrated because they used to get parts from Japan and China, and they were actually good and delivered on time. The company then decided to get parts from the UK only, and the parts aren't as good, and they're not delivered on time. This is frustrating to them in manufacturing, and it's now starting to frustrate the dealership, and there's an erosion of dealership support because of this. So my guy goes into a meeting and says to the CEO, I've been doing some research on you, and here's what I found. Bam! The CEO says, how did you find that out? He said, I've got my sources. And he got the job. Yeah, sure. That was something he felt he could do something with. Anybody, any thoughts on this? And opinions, reactions? Is this something you could do? So what I'd like you to do now is take out a piece. Yep?
Are you suggesting this Dunkin' Donuts approach primarily for situations in
Yes, this is all this, all everything we're talking about assumes you have a job interview. And these are all techniques that I'm suggesting before you walk in the door for that interview. So I'd like you to take out a piece of paper.
Now, going back to your earlier one about making friends with the recruiter.
Yep.
That's the recruiter of the employer.
Correct? Yeah, that's all, but of course.
But you earlier mentioned that this process, starts everything up to entering the door of the employer.
Yep.
So normally aren't you in touch with that recruiter after you enter that door?
The way I work, and I hope you chime in, John, is I'll be talking to a candidate to do the initial screening. And then I may have a physical meeting with that person, or a telephone meeting with that person, then get to know them, then say, okay, I'm going to put you on the panel. Then I call back and say, okay, you're scheduled for December 3rd. It's a...
In other words, it's in advance of meeting with the hiring manager.
It's in advance of meeting with the hiring manager. That I...
Yes, yeah, I think the question would be, it could be whoever is setting up the interview.
Right. So
it could be a recruiter like myself, or a retained search myself, or it could be the person that you're actually getting a call from the company.
Right.
I suppose they might even answer that question, even though they're an employee of the organization.
Yeah, when I'm saying a job interview, I'm talking about an interview with a hiring authority with the ability to hire you. I'm looking at recruiters like me as screeners.
Gatekeepers.
Yeah.
The Dunkin' Donut approach, you know, it's a little bit out of the comfort zone, to your point earlier,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
I'm just thinking, what if you actually run into the hiring manager and you don't even know it at a point? I mean, is that a risk if you happen to... You know, sit down with the hiring
well, I suppose, again, you can. The kind of person that I would want to work for is probably would probably be somebody who's marketing oriented, who likes to think outside the box, who would say, I would not expect that from a CFO. Good for you. I probably wouldn't want to work for somebody who would say, that's an unexpected thing for a CFO to do. I consider that unprofessional, and I'd never hire you.
Think so?
Yeah, I mean, the issue is, you can't please everybody.
So your initial concept was predicated on that cashier behind the counter knowing who these people are, where they work.
Dunkin' Donuts, it could be problematic. If there's another coffee shop, it may be easier.
Yeah. I'm just trying to, in my mind, think, okay, if the cashier doesn't know anybody, how would I approach finding the folks there without... coming off as a bit of a stalker, you know.
Well, again, it depends if the job is, if it is generally known that there's an opening, or if the recruiter called and said it's confidential that we're doing a search. If the recruiter says it's confidential that we're doing a search, then you really can't use this technique.
Right.
If, on the other hand, the recruiter, the CFO has retired, and it's an open search and everybody knows, then you can talk to anybody.
Sure.
Anywhere you could, you know, on a nicer day than today, you could even stand in the corner and talk to people. Yeah, does that seem odd? Yeah. So what? Either you're positioning somebody who can help the company think outside the box or not. Either they want that skill or not. Larry?
back to Ron's point, I've had either some very good recruiters who really prep me for the interview to answer the questions of, this is what this guy's person is, you're going to meet with that individual, there's some quirks, here's some landmines, think about this, here's culture, you know, they were kind of steering their candidates very well about, here's what to expect, and I'm sure it's helping them that you're going to be ready, I'm going to look like, you know, you're ready, etc. But it touched on these, but obviously all recruiters aren't the same. So it depends, and you got to do your own research.
Right.
But, you know, the good ones, you know, I won't name them, they're still in the business, were really good about, Larry, let's talk for 10 minutes, and I'm going to, you know, give you boom, 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 to really prepare you for what this person's like, their quirks, their, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that, maybe that's a luxury.
But in advance of that, you have proven yourself to that recruiter.
Right, because you're on that slate. So, and that then recruiter.
No.
More than just being on the slate. You know,
and they know the client versus
writing,
you.
Yeah. Know,
No, not necessarily. Larry's right. When I do that, I'm sure you do that. When a recruiter does that, doesn't mean you've proven yourself. It means you're qualified to be on the panel. Ultimately, the client is going to make the final decision. I just don't want Larry to say something that's going to make me look bad. So now, I think recruiters, like everybody else, they fall in a normal distribution. And you're right. Probably the top 25% would do that and wouldn't need to be told to do it. When you're looking at the maybe the 50th percentile, the 40th percentile, they actually need to be ask a question like I'm suggesting to prep them, because they're very busy. They've got multiple searches going on. If you ask, they'll say, oh, sure, glad to help. Then you're looking at the bottom third. It won't make any difference. They don't know the client well enough, or they don't really understand why you're even asking the question.
Larry, should you steer them away from discussions of a personal nature about employees of the company, or let them spew? If someone is obstinate, if someone's unhappy.
I think the less you say, the better. The more you let somebody talk, the better. You're there to listen.
See, I'm thinking sometimes I don't want to know personal things about, let's say I'm replacing a CFO and I'm going to be speaking with him. They don't like that individual.
Again, my feeling is that at this point, it is simply data. It's one data point. I don't treat it any more than a piece of data. I'm looking for trends.
You know, I think what you said in the beginning, that this is a marketing exercise, which it is, and marketing research is just like you described here, and it's all about just different data points and trends and finding a theme. It's neither right nor wrong. It's just what is, and then it's how do you assess that information and put it to use, I think.
That's right. That's right.
The question you asked there is one we used all the time in Voice of the Customer, you know, when we were checking would our customers recommend us to a friend or colleague on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yep.
And 8 through 10 were proponents of the company, and the, you know, the 0 to 3 were detractors, and the ones in between were neutral. And that has been proven over and over again to be the single most important question you can ask on a customer service survey now in business, and it gives you a good indication of where you're tracking and whether you're improving year over year. And it sounds like this would be similar.
It is similar. It's the exact same thing. I got this idea from one of my clients, Thermo Fisher. They every year they would ask all their employees one question. Mm-hmm. That one question. I would recommend Thermo Fisher as a place to work if asked by a friend or colleague. 0 is never, 10 is always. Pick a number. And then they could plot where they had high advocates, and they could ask, and usually that meant that they had some good first-line supervisors. And these would be the people you want to use as role models. And they could look at the red spots where people were really antagonistic, and they knew that's where they had problems. And usually it was first-line supervision was the issue. Right. So, yeah, the nice thing about that one question is it ties the internal workings of the company to the external workings of the company, and that's all smooth and with one question. Let's talk about the next phase, which is secondary research. Primary research is actually just using multiple senses, hearing, seeing, smelling. Secondary research is much more using one sense. You're either reading a document or you're listening to an audio, but you're only doing one sense at a time. So I'm going to talk about some secondary research tools that I find valuable in my work and what we recommend to our clients. I'm going to make an assumption here that we are talking about a private company, and I'm not going to, I'm prepared to talk about nonprofits if anybody wants to deal with that. I'm prepared to talk about public companies if anybody wants to talk about that, but since most of your market in Boston will be not, private companies, I want to focus on that. I assume you all, who has used DNB credit reports? I find DNB credit reports a useful tool. I tell my clients, DNB, don't leave home without them, particularly as you get closer to a job, a real job interview. One of the things I'm looking for are the lawsuits that have been filed against a company. We live in the United States of America. It is, as we all know, it's the 27th Amendment of the Constitution. Anybody can sue anybody for any reason, and they will. So if a company has a lawsuit against it, that doesn't really mean anything, but I'm looking for a pattern. I'm looking for a pattern of lawsuits. And DNB will give that to me. The second thing I'm looking for is the relationship between the current ratio and the Paydex score. Current ratio, what am I telling this group, is current assets over current liabilities. The Paydex score is how they're paying their vendors. I'm embarrassed to say, I had a situation where there was a company with a current ratio of 1.3, which is pretty good, and a Paydex score in the bottom 20th percentile. I knew what that meant. It meant that they have the money to pay their vendors, but for whatever reasons, philosophically, culturally, they want to screw their vendors. And there were lots of lawsuits from their vendors. And of course, I denied the implications of what I was reading, as if, of course, I'll be different. No, I wasn't. So if you have a very low Paydex score and a reasonably good current ratio, that to me is an amber flag. Anybody else get anything out of DNB reports they'd like to share? Okay. LexisNexis. Anybody ever looked at LexisNexis? Okay. If you don't have access to DNB credit reports, go to your local law firm will have LexisNexis. Universities have LexisNexis. And you can type in the name of the company and it will show you lawsuits that have been filed against the company. Again, you're not looking for specific lawsuit, you're looking for patterns. What does this tell you about the culture and the environment? Anybody ever use LexisNexis? Okay. News.google.com, who's used that? The default when you're on the World Wide Web is google.web. News.google.com is different. It's an aggregator of newspaper articles from around the world, including local ones. Example, I was doing a search for a vice president of human resources. Everything was going fine. Chemistry was fine. I thought she'd be a really good fit. And then just for due diligence, I went to Google, news.google.com, typed her name up. Turns out she'd been hounded out of New Hampshire for practicing insurance without a license. And there were some problems that she had, and it was never illegal, but she fled the state. And of course, she didn't tell me that in the interview, but it was right there in Google. So one of the things I would do is go to news.google.com, type the name of the company that you're talking to. I would type the name of the individuals that you're going to be having an interview with. Sometimes it will be, most of the times it's going to be fairly innocuous stuff, that somebody is chairman of the finance committee of the local church, and they're involved in this and that in the town, and that's something you can talk about. News.google.com. I find that departures from a company is the business equivalent of the canary in the coal mine. Who is leaving? I knew Merrill Lynch was in trouble 2 years before everybody else knew it was in trouble. The reason I knew it was in trouble was I kept seeing these articles about departures of senior executives. You know, there is a saying that is true about rats leaving the ship. The people in the know are the ones who are in management, and if you start seeing a lot of articles about people leaving, that's an indication. Again, one of the ways of doing that is to go to linkedin.com, type in the name of your target company, and then also put name departures. There's also a whole section every time somebody on LinkedIn has left a company. It says you want to see that. You might also go to news.google.com, type in the name of the company, and then the word departure, and see what you're looking for are trends. For example, there was an article in today's paper in the Boston Business Journal that a senior executive from the Boston Globe has left for Washington, D.C. Okay, that's a data point. Doesn't mean anything. But I'm expecting over the next 2 or 3 months, other people will start leaving the Boston Globe. If that happens, that confirms there's more of a problem here. So again, look at departures as the canary in the coal mine or the rats leaving the ship. Boston Business Journal is an excellent source. Most of you are looking for jobs in the local community. BBJ covers the local community better than anybody else. So I would be doing keyword searches in the BBJ. Any questions about this? Any reactions? What are your favorite websites that you might use if you were doing a search for a private company? Hoover's, yep. Hoover's is excellent. Anybody else have a favorite? Anybody want to talk about?
I just type in regular Google the name of the company followed by lawsuits and things like that.
Yep.
Is one I use CityBiz?
City what?
CityBiz.
CityBiz, yep.
That LinkedIn.com departures is a good way to find openings, too.
Yeah, it's also a good way to find openings. Anybody interested in nonprofits? Okay. If you're interested in nonprofits, you want to get a subscription to GuideStar.com, GUIDESTAR.com. It's free.
.org.
GuideStar.org. And all what's called 501(c)s are required to file a document which is called the Form 990, and that has all sorts of juicy financials in it, and it's all available for you. The problem with GuideStar is that some of the 501(c)s are dated. They could be 2 years old, but at least you have a source of information. Anybody else have any questions about web-based resources that you could use?
I love the VC business, but if you got a buddy or two in that industry, Venture Source is a very high-priced subscription that most VC and PE guys belong to. And for FBRs, I was certainly pulling data on portfolio companies that are venture-backed, and you can drill down into their financing rounds, pre and post management teams. It gives a real flavor when you're going to walk in an interview to know what investor money is in here, what they're really, what they need to get for multiple, and where they are in their stage of life, et cetera, their Series B, C, D, et cetera. So, nice source, but it's incredibly proprietary. But if you can get at it, it's a way to look under the kimono of a VC-backed portfolio.
Larry's right, but the poor man's way of dealing with that is called PwC Money Tree, published by PricewaterhouseCoopers. It has a lot of really good information. There are a number of people in this room who are in the life sciences industry. You can go into their industry section and you can see which venture capital firms have been funding what life sciences. So you get a sense of who's in the market right now, who's not in the market, what kind of life sciences seem to be hot. And so you could track it down. Not as good as Larry's source, it's a lot cheaper. Karen?
There's another one that that if you're wanting to go with a startup, one that's VC funded or private equity funded, there's a rating agency for VC firms called thefunded.com. And if you go in there, it'll pull up the VC firms for your particular region. And you can go then to the website of the firm, and typically they'll list all the job openings for all their funded companies.
Oh, really? The Funded?
It's really cool. Yeah,
Thefunded.com.
Thefunded.com. Mm-hmm.
Be Funded or The Funded?
The as in the article, T-H-E. Yeah. And and it's a way to get into
the funded.com.
It's a way of getting into a VC.
Yeah.
They typically have a career area. They're also the list of all
that's great.
Positions that are open.
Anybody else? We talked about BBJ. Glassdoor can be a useful tool. Glassdoor is a place where employees can post their ideas, their attitudes about a particular company. Obviously, it is a place where people can bitch and moan. So there's going to be a bias towards the negativity. But what you're looking for, again, this is, I know I'm repeating myself, these are simply data points. And a data point is simply a data point. What you're looking for are connections, threads, links, themes. If just somebody has a badass attitude about a particular company, somebody's got a badass attitude. That's the way it goes. If you see five people with the same attitudes, now you're starting to see a trend. So again, as part of it, I would go to Glassdoor.com. If you want to see the power of Glassdoor.com, the easiest way to do that is to go to Glassdoor.com and first go to Southwestern Airlines, which is a public company in the commercial airline business that has headquarters in Dallas-Fort Worth area, and see what the employees say about Southwestern Airlines. Then go to American Airlines, which is a public company in the commercial airline business with headquarters in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and see what employees say about that place. And what you'll see are same industry, same location, two different companies, two different attitudes. YouTube. YouTube is also a place where you can sort of get a feel for a place. What are the videos that are on there? Again, it's very dramatic. When you go to Southwestern Airlines, you see really kind of funky stuff. Employees having fun, customers having fun, people singing. When you go to American Airlines, it's very, very corporate. So the YouTube will give you a feel for the place. Anybody ever used any of these?
Glassdoor.
You have? Okay. So, why don't you stand up and stretch? You've been sitting for too long. Stand up and stretch. All right, sit down. You're having too much fun. Sit down. That's enough. That's enough of that. My last piece of recommendation is do brain-body calisthenics before you gawk in the interview door. What do I mean by brain-body calisthenics? We know that the human body is a complex system, that the brain, our body systems are not actually separate. The mind, the body, it's all connected. It's all one system. We do the same thing in business, don't we? We say, don't think in silos. Think about the total business. Don't think in terms of silos. Well, we know the human body is the same way. Here's one of my favorite heroes, General Colin Powell. As far as I know, not convicted of a sex scandal yet. Secretary of State, and all-around good guy. But he has this routine, based on an interview that I saw, is right before he has a difficult meeting, he goes to the bathroom, he starts washing his hands, and he pretends he's Jackie Gleason in a movie called The Hustler. And then he says quietly to himself, "Let's play some pool, Fast Eddie." And he's referring to a scene where Jackie Gleason is losing, and Jackie Gleason gets up his courage and he washes his hands and he says, "Okay, Fast Eddie, let's play some pool." And he beats Fast Eddie. So he goes back to that scene and it gets him in the right mindset to deal with what he's got to deal with. Look at this guy. He's hunched over and he's reading his emails. Look at his arms. Look at his head. He's scrunched over. Could it be that his muscles are sending a signal to his mind, and then his mind is sending a signal to his endocrine system or his hormones? Turns out it's exactly what's happening. Professor Amy Cuddy of Harvard University has done a fascinating study about this. So simple. She took a bunch of Harvard Business School students, men and women, and she did a cotton swab of their mouth and analyzed two things, testosterone levels and cortisone levels. Let me see if I've got that. How many of you have ever seen Cesar Millan's The Dog Whisperer? Who's seen that? Okay. So what is Cesar Millan always talking about? He's trying to train. He says he's a dog trainer, but he's a human trainer.
Right.
He's training the humans.
Right.
And what is he trying to train the humans to do? He keeps saying it all in his programs.
Take control.
What's the word to use? Calm assertiveness. If you want the dog to follow you, you have to be calm and assertive. Well, the assertiveness comes from high levels of testosterone. The calmness comes from low levels of cortisone. Cortisone is secreted by the hormone system. It tells the adrenal gland to start putting adrenaline in the body. The more adrenaline you have, your body is geared up for what? Anybody remember?
Fight or flight.
So if you have high levels of testosterone, high levels of cortisone, you are really revved up, and you're tense. If you have high levels of cortisone, low levels of endocrine, you're calm and assertive. So Professor Cuddy took cotton swabs of people's mouths, tested for levels of testosterone and cortisone, both men and women. Then she had these students engage in a series of poses. One would be an assertive pose. This is an assertive pose. It's like I just won a marathon and I'm raising my hand and I'm going like this. Turns out that athletes who are blind, who have never seen anybody do this, when they win something, they do this. It turns out apes, when they feel triumphant, will do this. This is not just something that we just, you know, look, football guys, right? When they score a touchdown, what do? Boom! Ah! Right? This is. And what it does is it's a muscle, and then it tells the body, okay, start producing testosterone. It's a muscle talking to the brain. Brain talks to the hormone system. Here's another example of a power position. You're seated at a table, and you put your feet on the table, and you go like this. Any power position is when you're trying to make yourself bigger than you are. And then she would have people do power negative positions. So for 2 minutes, she would have people sit like that. In this one, I'm trying to make myself as small as possible. After 2 minutes, she took another cotton swab. Guess what? Just 2 minutes of posing, doing power posing, increased testosterone level, reduced cortisone levels. 2 minutes of power negative increased cortisone levels and decreased testosterone, just 2 minutes of posing. She has a several articles about this, but she has a fabulous a thing it was a TED talk that she gave. And if any of you would like that, just give me your business cards and this is on the PowerPoint, and you can listen to her talk. Well, next day, I'm making a sales call. And, you know, I do what I'm sure most of you would do. I will arrive between 15 minutes and 30 minutes before the scheduled time. I will be in the parking lot. I'm going to hit the door exactly at the right time, not a minute before, not a minute later, but I'm there. What am I doing? Well, I do what I always do. I take out my iPhone and I start checking my emails. I realized, what am I doing? I'm hunched in my car with an iPhone going like this. I'm now assuming a power negative position. Am I telling my body, is my muscle system telling my brain to tell the hormone system to decrease the testosterone and increase the cortisone level? I said, let me try this out. So I put my phone away. I go to the president's office. I said, can I use the men's room? And the secretary says, sure, down the hall. So I go in the hall. There's nobody there. I go in front of the mirror, and I go. I was so afraid somebody would walk in while I'm doing this. And I'm sure they would say, if that's his reaction, because he knows how to pee in a pot, I would imagine what his reaction would be if he had a stoplight. I go in the president's office. I'm there to talk about doing one coaching assignment for one employee. He asks me, what's my fee? I give him a number which is 20% higher than what I thought I was going to give. And his reaction was, oh, okay, that's reasonable. And when I walk out, I've got five assignments instead of one. So I'm here to say Professor Cuddy's on the right track. It makes sense if you think about the body as a system rather than discrete units. Anybody have any opinion about this? Thoughts about this? Ever try?
Video surveillance in the back.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Karen?
Is it significant for both genders?
Yes. Yep. Equally significant for both genders. It's very stunning if you see the video. She also has done some research, which came out in August, where she had people do power posing right before a mock job interview, and then others did negative, power, and then others neutral. And they videoed it, and then they gave it to a group of judges who didn't know which group it was, and those that were doing the power posing were significantly more likely to be hired. 2 minutes.
Larry, this goes kind of hand in hand with something that I've heard repeatedly in a mm-hmm. number of venues, which is in this day and age with the ever popular telephone interviews.
Yep.
Always do them standing up.
Yep.
Always do them with a smile on your face. And it really does resonate through.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think a lot of it is the same kind of body dynamics and body.
I would say yes and to that. What she is saying is, if you think about those great athletes that I showed you, one from tennis, one from football, one from golf, all three of them are going to do calisthenics before they go on the field, right? If you're a ballet dancer or if you're an actor, you're going to be doing calisthenics with your voice before you go in the field. What she's really talking about are more like calisthenics with your body before you get on the phone, before you pick up the phone. Now, the things you're talking about, which we recommend too, which is you'd be walking around, you'd be using your hands, and you also be smiling, because that's going to tense up your vocal cords and make you sound more energetic. That's more the mechanics, so that somebody on the other end of the line who doesn't know you is going to say, boy, that person has a lot of energy. Amy's talking about something different, which is more calisthenics before you make the call. Any other questions or reactions to this? So, let's summarize. Our mission is to kill your competition. And it starts before you walked in the interview room. Notice there's nothing that I said today about anything to do with the dynamics of the interview itself. I'm just talking about the preparation before you walk in the room. It requires discipline. And there's a system to it. And the system was first primary research, followed by secondary research, followed by brain-body calisthenics. If any of you'd like a copy of the slides, give me your PowerPoints. I'll also give you a copy of the audio portion of what of this talk. And I thank you very much. Any questions?
Larry, just one thing that you mentioned, check with your network if as to people who know people that you might be interviewing. Just get a read on the
individuals you're going to read. And LinkedIn is very good with that. I assume everybody's on LinkedIn. So that LinkedIn can be good with that.
All right, thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Next month, I'm meeting in December 11th. We're doing this CFO panel for nonprofit.